apparently went along with the coroner to Crosby Wells Cottage to collect the man's remains.
Yes, and then buried him, said Balfour, nodding. Dug the grave.
Devlin, said Lerventhal, striking the table. That's his name, Devlin. But I haven't got the first name. Give me another moment.
But anyway, said Balfour, as I was asking, what's he got to do with stains?
I don't exactly know, Lerventhal admitted. From our brief conversation, I gathered that he needed to speak to Mr. Staines very urgently, either about the death of Crosby Wells, or about something related to the death of Crosby Wells. But I can't tell you any more than that. I didn't ask.
It's a shame you didn't, said Balfour. That's a loose end, that is.
Why, Tom, said Lerventhal with a sudden smile, you are sounding like a detective.
Balfour flushed.
Oh, I'm not really, he said. I'm only trying to figure something out.
Figure something out? For your friend Lauderbeck, who has sworn you to silence.
Balfour remembered that the clergyman had also overheard Lauderbeck's story that same morning, and this thought prompted a stirring of alarm. There was a real loose end, he thought. Really, Lauderbeck ought to have been more cautious in speaking of such private matters in a public place.
Well, he said, bristling, isn't it odd, this chap Devlin?
Cowell Devlin, said Lerventhal. That's his name. I knew it would come to me. Cowell Devlin. Yes. Unfortunate teeth.
Whoever he is, I've never seen him before, Balfour said. Why is he so concerned about Emery Staines, out of nowhere? Doesn't it strike you as odd?
Oh, very odd, Lerventhal said, still smiling. Very odd. But you're getting hot under your collar, Tom.
Balfour had indeed become very flushed.
It's Lauderbeck, he began.
But Lerventhal shook his head.
No, no. I won't make you break your confidence, he said. I was only teasing you.
Let's change the subject. I won't ask.
But Thomas Balfour was wishing very much that Lerventhal would ask. He was very ready to betray Alistair Lauderbeck's confidence, and he had rather hoped that by pretending that he could not possibly divulge the politician's secret, he could tempt Lerventhal to beg him to do exactly that. But evidently Lerventhal did not play this kind of game. Perhaps he did not wish to, or perhaps he did not know that he might. Balfour felt stifled. He wished that at the outset he had sat down and told the tale of Lauderbeck's blackmail and proposed revenge, frankly and in full. Now he would have to leave without really having learned anything, for he could hardly offer to narrate the story now after the editor had assured him he did not need to know it. We will interject to observe that this was a regrettable censorship, for if Balfour had recounted Lauderbeck's tale in full, the events of the 27th of January might have played out rather differently for him, and for a number of other men. Prompted by certain particulars of Lauderbeck's story, Lerventhal would have remembered an event that he had not had reason to remember for many months, a memory that would have been of great assistance to Balfour's investigations of Carver, helping to explain, in part at least, that man's mysterious assumption of the surname Wells. As it happened, however, Balfour did not narrate Lauderbeck's tale, and Lerventhal's memory was not jogged, and presently Balfour, rising from the spattered table, had no choice but to thank his friend and bid him goodbye, feeling, as Lerventhal also did, that their conversation had been something of a disappointment, having served only to raise his hopes and then frustrate them. Lerventhal returned to the quiet contemplation of his faith, and Balfour to the slush of Revel Street, where the bells were ringing 3:30. The day rolled on. But onward also rolls the outer sphere, the boundless present which contains the bounded past. This story is being narrated, with much allusion and repeated emphasis, to Walter Moody, and Benjamin Lerventhal, who is also present in the smoking room of the Crown Hotel, is hearing parts of the tale for the very first time. Suddenly he's put in mind of an event that occurred some 8 months prior. When Thomas Balfour pauses to drink, as he is doing now, Lerventhal steps forward around the billiard table and raises his hand to indicate that he wishes to interject. Balfour invites him to do so, and Lerventhal begins to narrate the memory that has so recently returned to him, speaking with the hushed gravity of one conveying very important news. Here is his account. One morning in the month of June, 1865, a dark-haired man with a scar on his cheek entered Lerventhal's small office on Weld Street and asked for a notice to be placed in the West Coast Times. Lerventhal agreed, took out his pen, and asked the man what he wished to advertise. The man replied that he had lost a shipping crate that contained items of great personal value. He would pay a sum of £20 if the crate were to be returned to him, or £50 if the crate were to be returned to him unopened. He did not say what was inside the crate, beyond the fact that its personal value was considerable. He spoke gruffly, and used very plain words. When Lerventhal asked his name, he did not answer. Instead, he pulled a birth certificate from his pocket and laid it on the desk. Lerventhal copied down the name, Mr. Crosby Francis Wells, and inquired, finally, where the man would like responders to be directed if indeed his lost shipping crate was found. The man named an address on Gibson Quay. Lerventhal recorded this, filled out a receipt, collected his fee, and then bid the man good morning. One might well ask, and indeed Moody did ask, how Lerventhal could be so certain of the precise details of this event, given that the memory had only just returned to him nearly 8 months later, and he had not had any opportunity to verify its particulars. How could Lerventhal be sure, firstly, that the man who placed this advertisement did indeed have a scar upon his cheek? Secondly, that this event had taken place in June of the previous year? And thirdly, that the name upon the birth certificate was, without a shadow of a doubt, Crosby Francis Wells? Lerventhal's reply was courteous, but rather lengthy. He explained to Moody that the West Coast Times had been founded in May of 1865, roughly 1 month after Lerventhal's first landing in New Zealand. At first printing, the newspaper's print run was a mere 20 copies, one each for Hokitika's 18 hotels, one for the newly appointed magistrate, and one for Lerventhal himself. Within a month, and following the purchase of a steam-powered press, Lerventhal's print run had expanded to 200. Now, in January 1866, he was printing nearly 1,000 copies of every edition, and he had hired a staff of 2. In order to advertise to his subscribers that the Times had been Hokitika